Hi, this is Jerry Pippin, and welcome back to the story of the Platters, probably the top pop group of the 50s. That's the music of Liberace. This half hour with Liberace for a reason. Liberace and Nola. Jean Bennett, our guest, has been there from the beginning. She was there for the formation of the Platters, and she still books them 50-plus years later. When Jean first moved to Hollywood, she actually worked with Seymour Heller in the beginning. That was just down the hall from Buck Ram's office. And Seymour Heller was the force behind Liberace. We have Jean Bennett with us. Actually, we were with her. We're in her office, which is in her home, a complex in North Las Vegas. Well, I guess maybe it'd be Northwest Las Vegas, wouldn't it, Gene? Anyway, it's good to be here with you. We just played Liberace. You were telling me that actually Seymour Heller discovered Liberace in Milwaukee?
Yes, when Seymour met him on one of his trips, and he admired his work, and it was playing in a kind of a beer joint or something in Milwaukee. But he said he was a fantastic player. But a few weeks later, he comes to work one morning at our office, and here sits Liberace on his luggage and is
sitting there in his suitcase and at the door.
He said, "Seymour, I just decided you have to be my manager." Seymour says, "What the heck am I going to do?" He said, "I don't know where the world is." You know, he said, "There's not that many piano players. There's Carmen Cavallaro," and you know, he said, "I don't know if the world's ready for another keyboard man or not."
Well, he came up with a good idea.
But he was
Who came up with the idea of the TV show?
He did. Seymour did.
Yeah, okay.
Seymour came up. He got that little theater there on Wilshire Boulevard, and they sent out little bulletins to all the homes up and down the street where all these little old ladies lived to invite them to a Wednesday afternoon television show. To, you know, taping of a television show. Man, after the first week, they were just packing in, and he got Gil Films to go in. They set it up with a beautiful grand piano and the candelabra and all that stuff. And then he began
to...
What
was Liberace flamboyant?
They did a half hour. He was very during that early part of his career. He always dressed in beautiful tuxedos and very immaculate. No, all the comedy stuff came after much later, many years later.
The TV show was a pioneer in broadcasting, made history. It was a film show.
Yeah.
and syndicated independently.
Right.
And women loved him everywhere.
Oh, my goodness. We got pictures and fan mail and stuff from old ladies and young girls. And one afternoon in our office, there was a young girl walked in. She was about 14, 15 years old. She said, "I want to see Liberace." And I said, "Well, Liberace doesn't work out of this office. He has his own office." She said, "Oh," she said, "I must see him. Where?" She said, "I've come from, I don't know where it was, back in the Midwest somewhere." And she said, "I'm supposed to be on my way to San Diego to my sister's." But she said, "I really made this trip. I made up my mind I was going to stop off and see Liberace somehow, some way." So I said, "Well, hold on." I said, "Let me call Susie, his fan club secretary." And I told her, I said, "This girl, she's on her way to San Diego, but she stopped off. She's bound determined. She just adores Liberace." So Susie said, "Let me talk to Lee, and I'll get right back with you." And he called over and talked to the girl and said, "Honey, I'm very proud and, you know, flattered that you came all this way to see me. But," he said, I "would love to see you today, but I cannot do that. I have commitments." But he said, "I'm going to do it. You go to San Diego to your sister's. I have a concert in 2 weeks." And he said, "I'll see that you have passes for you and your family, and you come backstage to see me after that show. And I thought that was really, really nice of him.
He was a real person.
Yeah. So he was always very genuine. And I think that after he came up here and he started staying at these places here in Las Vegas and all, he knew that he had to do more than just be the classical pianist. He had to be the showman. And he turned out to be the ultimate showman. But he was a nice man. Great guy.
You had a lot of experience back in those days besides the rock and roll acts.
Oh, yes.
You know, Lawrence Welk.
Oh.
He was a TV pioneer, too.
Yes, he was.
And didn't Heller manage him, or was Lutz?
No, it's Sam Lutz.
Yeah. Right.
So through Sam and my working with them, I got a pass to the Aragon Ballroom.
Yeah.
So we'd go out there quite often. And we did work for Lawrence we'd have to address thousands of Christmas cards and all that kind of stuff, you know, for him too.
He did a lot of fairs too.
Yes, yes. Well, he was for a long time. Sam had signed him up with KTLA.
Yes,
and so he was stuck there. But nobody did anything with that ballroom, that Aragon Ballroom, until he got into it. And he never let anybody go into that ballroom without they signed their name and address. And we had to address Christmas cards and everything else by the thousands to his fans that signed up over the years.
Now, the Aragon Ballroom was located where?
It was down on Santa Monica Pier.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, Santa Monica, and it was a lot of fun. Ben and I went down there quite often. I have pictures in my files of Sam and Seymour, and Lawrence Welk.
Gene, before we go any further, Lawrence Welk and the Aragon Ballroom, really probably the most famous dance orchestra group of all time, thanks to television. And I can't go on without doing this. For people who remember Lawrence Welk and the Lawrence Welk Show on ABC, this will really be funny. And for the rest of you, it will give you a taste of what was happening in the 50s on television and Lawrence Welk. This is Stan Freberg and his takeoff on the Lawrence Welk Show.
Thank you. Thank you, and good evening, friends. We're coming to you once again from the beautiful Aragon Ballroom on Lick Pier at the beautiful Santa Monica Beach, California. We've been getting lots of cards and letters from you folks out there in the television land. And we surely do thank you for for all the carts and the letters from you folks out there in the television land. Starting us off tonight is our trio, the Lemon Sisters. And girls, what are you going to sing?
We're going to sing "Thank You for All Those Cards and Letters, You Folks Out There in Television Land."
Lent.
Lant.
An appropriate number. One and two and...
Thank you for all those cards and letters, you folks in television land. We wonder where this television land is. Could it be a couple of miles from where Disneyland is? Oh, well, nevertheless, you guys and gals see.
What is that noise there? The bubble machine. Turn off just a moment. I'm sorry. Hold it just a moment, please. Turn off the bubble machine. Please turn off the bubble. Thank you, Lemon Sisters, for that lovely number. A wonderful, a wonderful. And now on the way to the show. Here's that man with the deep, deep voice, Larry Looper. Larry, what are you going to sing for us, Larry?
I'm going to sing "Thank You for All Those Cards and Letters."
I'm sorry, that number has been taken.
Well, I'll sing "The Funny Old Hills" then.
Good. One, and the two, and the... Hold it just a moment. The bubbles don't come till the end of the program. Turn off the bubbles. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Larry Looper, for that wonderful number. And now I would like to play a short instrumental medley based on the names of girls. One and two and... No. No, that's not it. Now, here's that young man about town from the brass section, Stony Stone Dwell, to sing "Please."
Please, lend your little ears to my plea.
What is the matter with that machine? Here, hit it with your horn. Hit it. Here, stick your mouthpiece in it there. A wonderful, a wonderful. And now, on with the show, here's our champagne lady, Alice Lean. Alice is going to sing "Moonlight and the Shadows." One and two and...
Ladies and gentlemen, for the first time in 25 years, my puffing finger is caught in my cheek. Will you give me a hand there, Alice? Here, pull my arm. No, the other arm. Just pull it. Pull it. That's it.
Moonlight and shadows, and you in my arms, and a melody in the bamboo tree, my sweet.
Somebody stop the bubble machine. The whole ballroom is lathering up with bubbles. And now I can't see the cameras. Here, let me set the accordion down on the stage. And I'll try and fix that. Bear with us, folks. Just a moment, please. Gee, the time is running out, and we haven't even played the polka. Wait a minute, boys. I didn't mean... Hold it, Alice. Don't polka on my accordion. Gee, Dad, it was a Wurlitzer. Hit the theme, boys. And so it's good night from all the champagne. Where's the cameras? There's so many bubbles, I can't. And so, friends, we help.
The whole ballroom is shoving off the sea.
Yeah, sure is a clear night, ain't it, Captain?
Yep, matey. These are the kind of nights when the sea plays tricks on you.
Yeah, I recollect one night off Singapore.
Tricks, I say. Like that mirage off the port bow now.
What?
See it there? Kind of bubbly looking in the moonlight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. See, if I didn't know better, I'd say it looks like the Aragon Ballroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a catchy chanty you're humming there, Captain. What is it?
Oh, I don't know. It just keeps running through my head.
Well, let's go below and catch a little shut-eye.
Okay.
Help. Help. Wonderful, wonderful. Turn off the bubble machine. Help.
Well, Lawrence Welk was quite a showman, really, when you get down to it. That was Stan Freberg and his takeoff on the Lawrence Welk Show. Gene, we're going to prove that Lawrence Welk was a nice guy and not a parody. When we come back, I have a surprise for you. Later on, we're going to play a tune that you probably haven't heard, at least not very often. But it's a good song. And then, of course, later in the show, as we continue our series and future half hours, we have much, much more of the hits by the Platters. All coming up, but right now, let's pause for this.
Why visit the Grand Canyon in Arizona? Marv Mason knows why.
Mainly because the Grand Canyon is known as one of the seven natural wonders of the world.
No one gives a more personalized tour or knows more about the Grand Canyon than Marvelous Marv.
My main thing is education on the geology, because the Grand Canyon is a life record. It shows us where we were at one time on the planet with the continental drift and all the layers that were laid down by sediments, and then how the canyon was carved. And of course, the views, you know, picture doesn't do it justice. But it's nice to have somebody there tell you about it that's lived there.
It's the best way to tour the Grand Canyon. Marv picks you up in a modern van at your hotel in the Grand Canyon area and takes you on a day-long tour. Contact Marvelous Marv Vacation Tours. Call and talk to him personally, 928-707-0291, or visit his website.
MarvelousMarv.com. Real easy, real easy.
We're going to get back to the Platters here in a moment, Gene, but you mentioned Lawrence Welk and also Liberace. You know, Roberta Scott, our location producer here, she's had encounters with both of these people. Roberta? Why don't you tell me about it? In fact, why don't you tell the audience about it? Because I think it really kind of gives you an insight into both Liberace and Lawrence Welk.
Well, Jerry, in 1965, the men at Texas A&M in College Station, Texas, had Governor John Connally make me an honorary citizen of Texas and bestow me the honor of Miss Handicap Texas. I was a student at Oklahoma State University in Stillwater, Oklahoma. I was entered in the Miss Handicapped America pageant, which was held in Denver, Colorado. My sister and I flew to Denver for the pageant. I won runner-up in the pageant. And instead of flying home, we decided to rent a car and go to Colorado Springs. We went to the Broadmoor Hotel to look around, and Jimmy Rogers was there performing. He had helped crown me Miss Tulsa in 1961, and we had kept in touch. I called him, and he asked us to meet he and his wife in the lobby. He came down with an armful of records, and he signed them for me while we visited. He told me that Liberace was doing a show that evening. He called Liberace and told him I was in town, and Liberace said he would have two tickets waiting for my sister Charlene and me. What a surprise. It was a great night. Liberace acknowledged me from the stage and at the end said, "See you later." Someone with his group came and said Liberace wanted to see me backstage. So Charlene and I went backstage. He came over and hugged me and said he was so glad to meet me. Oh, I couldn't believe it. He went to a baby grand piano backstage and asked me to sit down. He played a little and then said, "I want to hear you yodel." I thought, "Oh my gosh." I said, "You must be kidding." Well, I thought, "Oh gosh, I can't yodel for Liberace." And one of the gentlemen there said, "He'll be the most expensive accompanist you will ever have. Why not?"
Well, so, Roberta, can you yodel for the audience without Liberace's accompaniment? We'd like to hear you.
Yeah, so I yodel. Yodel-oo-tee-lee-hee. Anyway, I yodeled and we laughed. Oh, man. Anyway, he told me what I should do with my crutches and make them dazzle and make them bright and colorful. And
you were on crutches. You only have one leg this time.
Yes. So. Mm-hmm. And so we visited a while longer, and then he said, "Hey, how about some pizza? Come and join us for some pizza and beer." Well, I had to thank him for the invitation, but it was late, and we had to get up early and head to Tulsa. What a night. By the way, I did do the razzle-dazzle on the 24 pairs of crutches that I use for my USO hospital tours.
Now, tell us what the razzle-dazzle is.
Well, I had some crutches with sequins on them. They were painted. I had all kinds of decorations on things. They were different colors. And crutch tops that matched my outfits. And it was really pretty. Really neat.
You did a little dance, you mean?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, how about Lawrence Welk? You had some encounters with him as well, I take it. I can't believe you turned Liberace down for a date.
In 1961, I was crowned Miss Tulsa with the help of Jimmy Rogers of Honeycomb fame. And on March 6, 1964, I lost my left leg to cancer. I had osteogenic sarcoma, a cancer in the bone. My story had gone all over the world by Associated Press and United Press International and Stars and Stripes. Lawrence Welk read about me and contacted the hospital, who contacted friends of the family, and he wanted to see if I could be his guest at his show at the Tulsa Civic Center, an honorary champagne lady. Well, Clark's Good Clothes provided a full sequin dress and coat with a mink collar. We went down the aisle at a certain time, and as I was being wheeled down, there was a light on us, and my parents were so surprised, and everyone started clapping as Lawrence Welk came down and met us at the front on the floor, and he motioned to us where to go, and we joined his wife. And he introduced me to his wife, and it was all thrilling. He was a very nice man and very, very thoughtful, and for many years I received Christmas cards from him. The following year, I met with him after the concert, and he insisted that I yodel for him. I have a photo of me singing to Lawrence Welk and he conducting. It was great.
Well, Roberta mentioned Jimmy Rogers, and Jimmy Rogers lives in Branson now. And Gene, you have a group of platters that you represent that entertain at Branson, don't you? I tell you what, let's do. Before we talk to you again, we have to play something by Jimmy Rogers, and why not? His major hit, Honeycomb.
Honeycomb, honeycomb. Well, it's a darn good life, and it's kind of funny how the Lord made the bee, and the bee made the honey, and the honey bee looking for a home. And they call it a honeycomb, and they roam the world, and they gathered all of the honeycomb in the one sweet fall. And the honeycomb from a million trips made my baby's lips. Oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my own. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my own. What a darn good life when you got a wife like a honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bee, I'm gonna look all around for a green, green tree. And he made a little tree, and I guess you heard
they made a little bird, and they waited all around until the end of spring. Again, every note that the birdies sing, and they put them all into one sweet tone. For my honeycomb, oh honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my phone. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone, and made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, the honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my phone. What a darn good life when you got a wife like the honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
And the Lord said, now that I made a bird, I'm gonna look all around for a little old word that sounds about sweet like a turtle dove. And I guess I'm gonna call it love. And he roamed the world, looking everywhere. We're getting love from here, love from there. And he put it all in a little old part of my baby's heart. Oh, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my own. Got a hank of hair and a piece of bone that made a walking, talking honeycomb. Well, honeycomb, oh, won't you be my baby? Well, the honeycomb be my own. What a darn good life when you got a wife like honeycomb.
Honeycomb.
Well, they were nice people. So were the Planters. Right, Gene? We'll be back in a moment with Gene Bennett. We're going to close this half hour with one of my favorite. It wasn't one of the biggest, but one of my favorite tunes by the Planters. It was an old standard when they recorded it. Of course, they recorded a lot of standards, didn't they? Here they are, the Planters and My Old Flame.
My old flame, I can't even think of his name, but it's funny now and then all my thoughts go flashing back again. So magnificent or elegant is my old flame. I've met so many who have fascinating ways, a fascinating gaze in their eyes. Some who take me up to the sky. Fascinating gaze in their eyes. Some would take me up to the skies, but their attempts of love, they were only imitations of my old flame. I can't even think of his name, never be the same until I discover what became of my old flame.
Well, this segment of the Planters is over this half hour, but next half hour we'll be back with Gene Bennett, and we'll be talking about the Planters and some very interesting stories behind some of their hit records.
Jerry Pippin!
welcome back on the musical biography of the Platters. This music in the 50s and 60s is becoming very rare these days simply because of life itself. Word came today that one of the great groups, Four Tops, lost one of their members, Levi Stubbs. The Platters and the Four Tops started in the 50s, reaching out across color lines to entertain millions around the world with a new kind of music, rock and roll. Let's get back to the Platters. The Platters were a big group from 1953 when they were formed, shortly after that, until now. There are still Platters groups going on today. Gene Bennett is our guest. And Gene, let's get back there to that first record, Only You, and you're going to Philadelphia. And I think the American Bandstand was an interesting story.
And then when I started traveling and meeting Philadelphia, I had to go. I was told by the distributors in Philadelphia that I had to go to Bob Horn, but he had the first dance program where all the kids come to dance.
Dick Clark. Dick Clark, I think, replaced him.
He did. He replaced him because he had to. Because I mean, Bob Horn got ran out of town on a rail just about. But anyway. So they told me, they said, you're bringing in new records. Buck was recording all these artists, and I was started peddling these records to the distributors and trying to get them to take it.
Other artists you were handling?
Oh, my goodness. We had the Penguins, the Flares, Shirley Gunter.
I remember her.
Cornell Gunter.
Were they related?
They were brother and sister.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Never put that together.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure the Platters went over great with the American Bandstand group because it was a slow dance. How many Platters groups have you had over the years, Gene?
I will definitely count them.
I guess that would be hard to keep track of. You don't really remember, huh? You interchange them, one or two here and there. How about that girl singer? the first one?
We found Zola Taylor. She was 15 years old. And Buck thought that she would help spark the group. And she certainly did. She was... I went out with her the very first night that she appeared on stage with him. He couldn't go for some reason or other. And he said, how'd she do? And I said, well, she didn't do much. I said, she's cute. But she just kind of clenched her fists and, you know, shut her eyes almost to sing. But I said, he said, oh, you wait till I get through with her. He said, she's going to be something. He had found her in Shirley Gunter's group. Mm-hmm. And he asked Shirley, he said, Shirley, you got a girl I would love to put with the Platters. He said, would you get mad at me if I did? She said, no, if it's an opportunity for her, of course not. He said, well, I appreciate that. But he said, I have a feeling about Zola Taylor. So Zola came to join with the group. And boy, did she live up to his expectations. She was the cutest. And when she went down, they went down, their first time out of the country, I think, was South America. They went down with they were down there about 6 months. And they were totally recognized before, you know, that's when Only You and the Great Pretender hit. Mm-hmm. Well, they were down there. And that's where we realized that we actually had an international act.
And the Platters are known around the world even today.
Had far more success faster in all those countries because we had been traveling. We'd been to the Philippines, we had been to, you know, mm-hmm. and they were popular.
Well, in the Orient, talking about the Pacific, the Platters were always big.
Yeah. So it was, and then we got a chance to go to the Olympia Music Hall from South America. Joe Glazer was our agent. And there again, there, something had happened. We had signed with Bob Phillips in the California office, and he had lost the contract. Joe Glazer in New York heard about the Platters from Irving Feld, who owned 9 record stores in the Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area. He had 9 record stores, and he used them as a barometer for all the new records coming out. He had everybody alerted. Anything that starts stepping out, I want to be the first to know. Irving Feld. Mm-hmm. People right,
you know, Gene, mind. We've talked about the Great Pretender all through the show. Let's play the song.
Oh, yes, I'm the Great Pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well. My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the Great Pretender. Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you've left me to grieve all alone. Conceal. Oh, yes, I'm the Great Pretender. Just laughing and gay like a clown. I seem to be what I'm not, you see. I'm wearing my heart like a crown. You're still around. Too real is this feeling of make-believe. Too real when I feel what my heart can't conceal. Yes, I'm the Great Pretender. Just laughing and gay like a clown. Like a crown, pretending that you're still around.
That was The Great Pretender, one of the big hits by the Planters, one of the first ones, as a matter of fact, Gene Bennett. The interesting thing about all of this, I think, is Buck Ram himself. He was a big band arranger, big band music fan, yet he became the king of rock and roll. An early pioneer in soul music, really.
Bringing out the very best in these people. They didn't even know they had.
Well, it was a coming thing, and he used to slip in, he told many times about slipping into the black church in their neighborhood in Chicago when he was growing up. He loved to hear them sing, and that rhythm and the way they, you know, it was so contagious to him. And so he always had an affinity for black singers and black musicians, and he traveled. He went out on those old tours where they had the touring cars with the canvas covers in the winter. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Welk had his band, and you know, he traveled back and forth over those hills for many, many years before he ever really made it in California. And he'd come in after paying all the guys off, and he'd ask Buck if he could spend the night on the couch because he was broke.
Yeah. You know, Gene, events, luck, play such a role in success in show business. Whether we're talking about the Planters, Lawrence Welk, Guy Lombardo,
really phenomenal, anybody. Because there again, if it hadn't happened just the way it did, and we hadn't played just the right places when we did, yeah, it could have gone completely haywire.
That's the magic and also the misery of show business.
That's the truth. Some things just won't happen, and other things happen that you least expect.
Yeah, or that you don't, it just come out of the blue.
Yeah, that's why it's such a fascinating business. I know it's hooked me all my life. I never did get to sing up to my expectations, but I've had such a good time with all the other singers. And
well, the interesting thing about the Platters is I don't guess they had a final concert or anything. I mean, they never really officially broke up.
No.
They just kept replacing people, right?
We just kept replacing. Okay. Yeah, we kept replacing, but we did have we had a pretty much of a breakup in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It was inevitable because Tony was such an alcoholic that he was just destroying himself. But we got him before that happened. Right after that happened, we'd still managed to get him with Reprise Records, Frank Sinatra's label.
The big label.
And you could get the magazines, any kind of domestic magazine, and there was Frank Sinatra ads and everything, you know. But we sent, the last time we sent Tony to over to Japan, He went on stage and he was so drunk he could hardly stand up, and they fired him. They sent
Why don't
him home.
We play My Prayer? I think that was the best thing Tony did, don't you?
When the twilight is gone, and no songbirds are singing, when the twilight is gone, you come into my heart. And here in my heart you will stay while I pray. My prayer is to linger with you at the end of the day, in a dream that's divine. My prayer is a rapture in bloom with the world far away and your lips close to mine. Tell me the words to know. May they still be the same for as long as we live.
I always liked your group you had down at the Four Queens.
That was a great run.
Yeah, they were great people.
Yeah, I had Monroe Powell with me for 25 years.
And who was the guy at the D-Boy? Williams?
Gene Williams.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
He's still around town. And he's every once in a while, we'll send him out with our group now. Right now, our group is doing mainly weekends or, you know, one-nighters and... It's the business has changed quite a bit. Now, we just got him back, however, from a month in Australia, and they want us back next year.
Well, we have lots of listeners in Australia.
So oh, yeah. They are very popular, but they're still. And so many of the groups, the people that I hired, they went and formed groups. And,
well,
you know, you just can't keep up with it.
I remember the Platters in some of those old Alan Freed movies. And maybe Dick Clark, too. I don't know. Buck Ram... he went to Europe, but I remember the Platters were doing a lot of standards.
Oh, yeah. He selected and he arranged them.
Mm-hmm.
And when he recorded a number of the albums over in Paris or in England, they would send David Carroll over to work with Buck. Buck would have the group have their parts, and he'd have the arrangement sketched out. And then he would go over everything with David Carroll for a day or so, and then David would hole up for about 3 days. We wouldn't even see him, and he'd come out and he'd have all these big orchestrations for 25 piece orchestras, and Buck was right there, and they
too, so he understood what
kind
of work.
Buck told him, I said, I want to hear this here, and I want and he had already sketched them out.
Now this was an old song when you recorded it 50 years ago. That was an old standard from the 30s by Jerome Kern.
My true love was true. Oh, I was blind. Something here inside cannot be denied. Said someday you'll find all who love are blind. Oh, when your heart's on fire, you must pray alive. Smoke gets in your eyes. I chant them and I gaily laugh to think they could doubt my love. Yet today my love has flown away. I am I cannot hide. So I smile and say, when a lovely flame dies, smoke gets in your eyes.
Smoke gets in your eyes.
gets in your eyes.
Gene, I think you've had a love affair with life, period. Gene Bennett, you're in your 80s. You look great.
I guess love of life more than anything else.
you're very youthful. Stay
I right. love what I'm doing. You know, I am looking forward to some very big things next year.
So you're not about to give up.
I'm not about to give up. And with the help of my doctor and Fosamax, no osteoporosis.
No, you bounce around like a young woman. That's yeah. what I meant by that.
Well, it is. It's I do think it's the will, and I just really enjoy what I'm doing. Sure, we have our ups and downs. Everything does. But I think, oh, well, tomorrow's a better day, so, you know.
Gene Bennett, it's been a thrill. Our time's up, unfortunately. You need to write down a detailed record of all of your things in the music business. I mean, it's incredible.
You got to write a book.
It's great history.
Well, I'm working on it. I'm trying to get everything calendared, and I've got some people that are interested in helping me.
Thank you for taking the time to tell our audience about the Platters. This has been our musical biography on the Platters, the great soft rock group of the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. It keeps going. Thanks for listening, everyone. Roberta Scott, our on-location producer. Jane Swartley, our web producer. Until next time, cheers.